I am Jason Whitlock. Welcome to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. Actually, Colin, Marcellus Wiley is off on vacation today. Coming up, we'll tell you why the Warriors actually had a great weekend, but we'll start with Kevin Durant. All right, the rules of Twitter dictated that everyone pretend Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving signing with the Brooklyn Nets was just another example of the incompetence of Knicks owner James Dolan. Oh, did I say owner? I'm sorry. Knicks governor James Dolan. If you wanted to trend, if you wanted a retweet or like, if you wanted to go viral Sunday afternoon, you just needed to bash Dolan. For months, conventional wisdom said the Knicks traded Kristaps Porzingis and cleared cap space in order to sign KD and Kyrie. It was a simple plan hatched a year ago that led to a dog day afternoon. Did you see what I did there? I referenced two classic movies, A Simple Plan and Dog Day Afternoon. Both movies tell the story of botched plans. A Simple Plan explores what happens when three small-town idiots discover $4 million in a crashed single-pilot plane. A bunch of people die, including the two dumbest idiots, and all the money is burned. Dog Day Afternoon is about three guys who decided to rob a bank at the absolute wrong time. Al Pacino's character winds up shouting, "Attica! Attica!" in front of the bank. My point is that making plans is great. Executing them is extremely difficult. I'm not sure James Dolan is stupid for backing out of the plan that was already showing signs of trouble. The stupid people just might be the ones performing for social media. Kevin Durant is hurt. He tore his Achilles 3 weeks ago. He's not going to play next season. Durant was perfectly healthy when the Knicks hatched their plan. ESPN's Ramona Shelbourne reported yesterday that Dolan and the Knicks didn't want to give Durant a max contract in the aftermath of his injury. This makes perfect sense. Durant is going to be 32 years old the next time he plays in the NBA. He'll be recovering from a catastrophic injury. He's the best offensive player in basketball, but he won't be a better player a year from now. He'll be less athletic. Equally important, he'll be more cynical. He'll never trust an organization, a medical staff, and a coaching staff the way he once trusted Golden State. The Knicks were smart to recalculate their plans. Smart people react to new information. And there's new information on Kyrie Irving, too. He's not a leader. We learned that watching him play in Boston this year. He's eccentric and moody. He couldn't make it work with Brad Stevens and a strong core of young players. The Nets just put together an AAU team. KD and Kyrie will spend the season having long debates about whether the earth is flat. And the following season, when they finally hit the court together, we could easily see two ball-dominant players reenact the same dysfunction that caused Durant to leave Russell Westbrook. What the Knicks did is not worthy of ridicule. What the Nets did is high risk and desperate. It'll be 2 years before we know which organization made the right decision. My money is on the Knicks. All right, joining the desk now, Fox Sports NBA analyst Jim Jackson and Bleacher Report's Rick Bucher. Jim, I'll start with you. Have we gone overboard here with the criticism of the Knicks? Were they smart to readjust their plans?
Was it, that's a two-pronged question. Are we criticizing too much? I don't think so. I think you got to go back to even 2010 when the Knicks had money, big free agency class. It was Amari they ended up getting, Joe Johnson, LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and all they got was Amari out of it. So it's been a trend set here with New York not getting those big-time players. This year, the whole talk, the whole year was, well, it's Kyrie and it's KD to New York. Mm-hmm. It's Kyrie.
KD and Kyrie. Well, so get it in order. Get it right.
That's semantics.
But, no, it's not.
Well, I'm saying in regards to them going, okay? But here's the thing. From what I gather, the retooling or the rethought process of free agency was based upon Kyrie, KD and Kyrie going together.
Yeah.
They knew that that wasn't going to happen, that Kyrie wasn't coming there. So they knew that KD wasn't coming there. So they had to look at it and say, we have to figure out ways now to bolster our team. It's not going to be the free agency we want, but we had to figure it out. That's what I'm told, that they knew before that Kyrie wasn't coming, which meant that KD was not going to come. So they had to rethink free agency and who to get in order to fill out their roster.
Well, they didn't want Kyrie by himself.
Exactly.
Without KD. Once KD got hurt, it changed everything. So now it became, okay, we'd still like to get KD. And why you heard the talk at the end of KD and Kawhi joining forces, because that worked with New York. I agree with you 1,000%. I can't blame the New York Knicks for what happened in 2010 because these aren't the same people running the Knicks that were running them then. I feel as if James Dolan has taken a step back. The New York Knicks looked at this market and said, there are two guys that are true supermax players. There's Kevin Durant and there's Kawhi Leonard. If we can get one of those two, then we'll pay the max. If we can get both, ideally. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to go, because they easily could have gone after a Kemba Walker or a Tobias Harris or a Jimmy Butler and offered them the max and said, well, we didn't get the big fish, but you know what? We got a little fish, and we're going to put the magnifying glass of a max contract on them. We're going to make them look like big fish. Well, how many teams did that when the TV revenue bumped up? And how many of those contracts have since been moved as a result of that? The Knicks still have a team to build, but ultimately, they didn't make a mistake yesterday. And I don't know. Maybe the Nets did. Maybe they didn't. They're last in attendance. It's a plus for them on the business side. But I'm not convinced that they won the day. They won the press conference.
I just think James Dolan is an easy target. And he's fresh bait to throw into your social media fodder and get retweets and likes. I don't believe he's stopping the Knicks from having success. Do you?
No, I don't. And talking to some people close to it is that James Dolan has admitted before, basketball is not my forte in regards to evaluating talent. Yeah. I know how to run a business. That's why you put a Steve Mills and Scott Perry in place so they can make those decisions. Even before that, you think about this. James Dolan, he went out and got what? Phil Jackson. There's a reason why, because of a basketball mind that could do the right thing, you know, supposedly.
Right.
Phil was different because not having his hands on the product, the players, as a upper management compared to coaches, two different things. So James Dolan has done some things to put some things in place. They just didn't work out. And in his case, he's going to be the scapegoat all the time.
Well, here's the other part. Kevin Durant was ready and willing to become a New York Knick before he blew his Achilles. James Dolan wasn't standing in the way of that. Kawhi Leonard was willing to have a meeting with them. James Dolan didn't prevent that from happening. The Kevin Durant blowing his Achilles changed his viewpoint of what it would be like to go to New York by himself. Now he wanted somebody to go with him. Knicks weren't going to be in. They didn't want to go with Kyrie because they didn't want to put their team in the hands of Kyrie for a year until KD got back. They would do it with Kawhi. Kawhi said, I'll play with you, KD, but I want to do it in L.A. Mm-hmm. Let's do it with the Clippers. KD was like, well, I want to play with you, but I want to do it in New York.
Right.
So ultimately, KD didn't get what he wanted. He got the next best thing. He got to play with one of his guys, and he got to play in the New York market. It just wasn't with the team that he originally thought he'd be playing with.
The reason I bring up this James Dolan topic and the reason why I'm passionate about it is because I was sitting back just looking. Everybody put a clown suit on this guy yesterday, and I'm going to admit my bias. I'm friends with Isaiah Thomas, and I love Isaiah Thomas, and I have a lot of respect for Isaiah Thomas. And James Dolan empowered him. And people can take their little pot shots or whatever, and they can distort things. But also, I look at James Dolan and go, well, he's also empowered Steve Mills. He's also empowered Scott Perry. I've known Scott Perry for more than 20 years. And I'm just looking at everybody blast James Dolan on one hand, and then they blast the ownership that doesn't give minority men, black dudes, an opportunity to be in power. Well, here's an owner that does it. And but he's the most incompetent guy in sports, and I just don't buy it. His New York Rangers today got a hell of a free agent in hockey. They've played for the Stanley Cup Finals with him owning the team. I just think a lot of the criticism of James Dolan is completely overblown.
Well, part of it, too, is that you want to have this aura about the Knicks basketball, okay, about this being relevant. That was in the, you know, late 80s, 90s, okay? A little bit further in there. But if you go back to the golden years in 69, 70, when they won it, 72, 73, okay, they got it. But other than that, you can't keep putting that on like this is New York, the best place to play.
Right.
These young guys don't look at it. Yeah, Madison Square Garden is great to go play in. We love the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. But from a team perspective, it didn't. And I tell you what, the Lakers almost fell into that a little bit in regards to being not relevant with the younger crowd because or the young kids that are coming up because they didn't see the Lakers being successful.
Yeah.
So living under that auspice, I think the expectations from people, especially in New York, that we're the Knicks, we're supposed to win. Well, Right. It doesn't work like that a lot of times. And to your point about Dolan, listen, he's tried to pull the strings to do things the right way. Steve Mills, Scott Perry, they're in position. They didn't want to overpay, get stuck with a contract, three to four years down the line that they couldn't move. So they'd rather just do it a different way.
Jim Dolan has been a PR nightmare. I mean, he's done a lot of things that are not good things. Getting into a pissing match with Charles Oakley.
I didn't like that.
Come on. You know, getting on video, yelling at fans, kicking them out. I mean, he's a nightmare. But the problem is you can't then just throw everything on him. And in this instance, first of all, I've been told that it's not true that he wasn't willing to give the max to KD. Or that. But the bottom line is he's seen the medicals. And if it's not like Jim Dolan is looking at the medicals and going, I don't trust this. I guarantee you team doctors were looking at it and giving him advice on that. And he made that decision. If you're looking at a guy at this age and saying, I don't know if this is a good bet. I don't know if Kyrie having him lead my team for a year is a good bet. Let's hold fire a little bit. I can't look at that and go, boy, Jim Dolan, he's an idiot again. That to me seems like a fairly shrewd move on my part.
Which leads to my last point on this. I don't like this KD Kyrie marriage. I don't think it's going to work in Brooklyn. I don't see these guys playing well together. And I think the book is out on Kyrie. He's flaky, to say the least. And he's not a guy that's a natural leader and can harness the energy and spirit and the minds of young players. I don't think my gut today says Kyrie and KD does not work in Brooklyn.
I'm going to push back on that because of the friendship that the two have. It's different like when it was Kyrie in Cleveland and then LeBron came in and sold the show. He treated him like a little brother. Kyrie really wasn't involved in that. He didn't really like that. I think with these two, it's a little bit different. And I'll say that what I love about KD is that KD is comfortable playing off the ball too. Okay, a lot of times in that Golden State offense, KD was off the ball. Now, at the end of the game, depending on who's rolling, the ball is going to be in their hands. But I think this is a different dynamic because the two chose to go together. So that means they've been talking for a while, and they are friends. So to me, when stuff maybe gets out of kilter, goes wrong a little bit, I think they can go back to that friendship a little bit more.
You know, friends shouldn't do business together.
Well, yeah.
Well, I get that.
So this to me strikes me as a decision made by a guy who's never been married.
Boom. That was my other point. Jim has, but go ahead.
Exactly.
having a friendship. Like, when you get married, it's all about the romance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get married, and now it's a working relationship. Now we got to work at this. KD and Kyrie have been friends for years, and they played on the national team, mm-hmm. okay? But we know that's a different dynamic. They've never had to carry this weight together. And now that friendship, it's why you don't hire friends to do work, and you don't work with friends. You keep that separate, because otherwise you're going to damage the relationship. That's where I see this potentially going sideways, is that the fit, I look at DeAndre Jordan and KD and Kyrie, and it is the Houston Rockets East.
No.
Same dynamic.
I don't agree with that. I don't think that Kyrie is James Harden. I think you have a balance with Kevin Durant a lot better. And I don't think the coaching from the perspective is like D'Antoni. So
I could make the case that Chris Paul is more of a playmaker and a ball distributor than either Kyrie or KD.
Well, I can make that too, but Chris has a different kind of attitude too with that. He's had that in the past. So I go back to, again, with the Houston thing, I go back to who's running the ship, who's on that bench. It's a little bit different to me in that front office what Brooklyn is doing. So I disagree from that perspective. That I compare it to a Houston volatile situation. We haven't seen it yet,
but I don't think so. And I'm a big fan of Kenny Atkinson, but I also haven't seen him coach talent. And as you well know,
that's
coaching talent is a whole different
animal. Steve Kerr didn't have a problem with it. He didn't coach talent. Steve Kerr was in the front office, but he had to listen.
Working with Jordan, you don't think prepared him to work with big talent and big egos?
Working with him and coaching him is two different things.
Well, okay, but here's the other thing. We're looking at Steph Curry, Draymond Green as a second-round pick, Klay Thompson. I mean, we're not talking about huge egos in that instance that Steve Kerr inherited. not egos like KD and Kyrie. You look at the rub between Steve Kerr and Kevin Durant, gives you an indication of just how Steve Kerr was prepared to coach guys of that caliber.
Right.
It was a little bit different coaching Kevin Durant than it was coaching those other guys.
Well, no doubt it was, and he had to figure out a way to do it because he never had it. So I think the thing with Kenny, too, is that he doesn't. Now, the question is, how does it happen when KD comes back?
Yeah.
That's the biggest question.
Because I'm just – what I think is the situation a lot of people – some people just can't follow. It's just not in their nature. Mm-hmm. They have to be leaders. And if KD comes back anywhere near the level that he was at, if he's 95, 97% of what he was, Kyrie would need to fall in line and follow. I don't think he's capable of that. And if Durant comes back at 94%, I think Kyrie's going to, oh, well, hell, I'm better than him. He needs to fall in line behind me.
We also have Kyrie's going to have a year of getting incorporated into that team with those players. And now KD comes along and you got to make this fit. I'd like this a lot better if the two were starting from scratch, like they were both at the starting line at the same time. This is going to extend the time that it takes to be able to make all these pieces work.
This is Jason Whitlock from Speak for Yourself, and I got a website you have to visit, pristine.com. Pristine Auction has daily auctions ending nightly and with a dollar starting bids. Authenticity is important to Pristine Auction. They guarantee authenticity and come with authentication from only the most trusted sources. Pristine auctions are affordable. Most people don't think they can afford this stuff, but it is much more affordable than you think. A signed Ray Lewis Baltimore Ravens jersey sold for under $100. A Mike Tyson autographed boxing glove sold for under $100. It's quick and free to register, free to bid, and you only pay if you win. Use registration code when joining pristine.com. That's pristine.com, and new users will receive a $5 auction credit. Again, you'll get a $5 auction credit when you register using the code SPEAK, S-P-E-A-K, to sign up for pristine.com. That's pristine.com. Time now for a big story. Let's move to the Warriors, who might have lost Kevin Durant, but reportedly added another all-star, acquiring D'Angelo Russell in a sign and trade with Durant's new team, the Nets. Russell should help fill a huge gap while Klay Thompson recovers from his ACL injury. And in order to make room for him, Golden State traded Andre Iguodala to the Memphis just a few days after Iguodala called out the team's medical staff. All right, I actually love what Golden State just did.
You can say
did.
It as loud as you want. Yeah. It ain't gonna make it any better.
Yeah.
Look, what? A 23-year-old all-star, 6'5", can score, can play defense. Klay Thompson's going to be down. You lose Kevin Durant. What better could they have gotten?
Listen, I'm an Ohio State guy, so you know I love D. Russ. But that contract with what he's been – not great job in Brooklyn, in the East. He did a great job. Does he fit when everything is together with Golden State? To me, I say no.
Everything's not together.
That's what I say. When everything is together, that means you're still stuck with that contract if it doesn't work.
No one will want a 6'5", 23-year-old.
For how much?
$117 million? No.
No.
No one's going.
They didn't want him. I mean, why do you think Golden State signed him? These were two people that needed each other. And so last room at the hotel, okay, I'll take it. It's not what I wanted, but it'll work. And can we please put all-star in air quotes? All-star. Because Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie got hurt. Because the Nets were the feel-good story. And this is, look, and I love the fact that he has redeemed himself from the Lakers situation. But he does not have the Warriors' DNA whatsoever. He's basically a younger version of Nick Young. He doesn't play D. He's a me guy. It doesn't play with a high basketball IQ. This is... If Draymond Green doesn't kill him, Steve Kerr will at some point. And I just ultimately this idea that they got, look, you got a couple additional pieces. You're going into a new building, so it gives you a little bit of pizzazz. But if we're talking about what's going to work on the basketball court, D. D'Angelo Russell is not the answer to their problems.
Before you go, could you answer my question? What should they have? What better? What was better out there? What should they have done? They had to do something.
Why?
Because they just lost Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson.
We just talked about the Knicks not making a mistake and how it was good that they didn't make a mistake.
Oh, Golden State makes a lot of mistakes.
Golden State made a mistake here. Look, they've had plenty of mistakes that they just weren't able to execute. They wanted to sign Tyson Chandler. They wanted to sign Dwight Howard. They signed DeAndre Jordan to an offer sheet. If any one of those happen, the small ball deal never happens. If David Lee doesn't pull his hamstring, we never see Draymond Green in the role that he had. If Andrew Bogut doesn't get hurt, we don't see Draymond Green then go to the five in a playoff situation. There are plenty of things that they've wanted to do that they weren't able to do, and they look back and they went, whew, glad we didn't do that. Right, this is a case where they got a chance to do it.
I think D has matured a lot having that role in Brooklyn, which I really do like. But I think this was a move that Golden State made because they're going across the river. They got to sell tickets. It's one of those pressure moves where we have to stay relevant. Even though we know Klay is not going to be there and Kevin is gone, we still got to be relevant. We still got to show our fans that we're making moves. And sometimes to me, that short-term decision hurts you long-term. Yeah, you got somebody that's going to play the point until Klay comes back and gives you some numbers. But after that is what I'm talking about, how they play, what Steve Kerr wants from his team. And I don't know if D. Russ fits that mold.
Before you go again, Rick, just help me understand. We saw a guy get run out of Los Angeles. Oh, he's the worst cancer in the world. Yeah. He showed pictures of Iggy Azalea or whatever he did. He squealed on Nick Young, whatever. Then he goes to Brooklyn. Would everybody admit he's better than what we thought? Mm-hmm. And then he's matured and
I already said that.
Right, okay. So you're telling me at 23, he's going to go to that organization with Draymond and Steph and that and he's not going to elevate even more? He's not going to mature and evolve even more?
I'm not saying he's not a good player, but he succeeded with the Nets because he was basically allowed to be whatever he needed to be, or wanted to be, mm-hmm. rather. When you play with the Warriors, you have to play within the way they play. You have to, I mean.
Why are you saying he's incapable of that?
Because he hasn't shown me that he's capable of it. Because he bought into the hype of himself with the Lakers, and then the basketball decisions that he made with the Nets, I saw a lot of decisions that were questionable decisions.
Yeah, and he's still growing, though. I mean, but here's the thing. He thrust into the spotlight in regards to Brooklyn because of some injuries or what happened. He responded well, but the ball was in his hands all the time. Mm. If I'm playing a point like that and I got the ball in my hands, I'm going to make something happen. That may not be – now, how efficient are you?
Right.
What kind of decisions do you make? And how does that relate to winning?
And is he going to play off the ball? Like, how is he going to play with Steph and Draymond are going to handle the ball a lot more than he is. How's he going to be effective when he now has to read and react?
And I think what happens, too, with Kevin Durant leaving, to me, the person that got hurt the most, and I always say this, was Draymond. Because with Kevin Durant, you added another ball handler, mm-hmm. a guy that takes the ball off the rim. And Draymond's biggest strength was what? A lot of times initiating offense, running it for Klay and Steph on those pin downs. Now I think he goes back to that role a little bit more. But then D. Russ, how do you play off the ball when you don't have it? Okay? And if you're going to play the point, how are you going to guard these point guards? I know Steph had his problems. You can't have Steph and Russ out there not guarding.
But could you not say Steph's physicality and athleticism limits his ability to defend? D. Russ, this is a decision. He can defend. He has the attributes to be a decent defender.
No, I'm not going to say that. Because whether you die on a pick and roll and get over the top, that's on you. That's effort. That has nothing to do with physicality.
Right.
And Steph does that a lot.
Yes.
That's just effort. If you want to be a good defensive player, you can, but that doesn't mean you have to be a shutdown defender. But it's little things within the scheme of the defense that you can do a lot better if you dedicate yourself to it, despite his stature, despite maybe not being as athletic.
I actually would like this better if they hadn't signed him to the deal. Because you got three players.
Much.
Yes. You got D'Angelo, you got Shabazz Napier, and you got Trevion Graham. They just needed players. They needed guys that they could put out there that have demonstrated they can play in the NBA. The 117 in the 4 years and the hype that you're giving it. Like, The greatest. They had the greatest day of
Philly. Better than Utah.
Because I just don't believe anybody had that great of a day. And particularly if we're sitting around running around like the Knicks, you know, just set the, I mean, the Nets just set the world on fire. For where they were at, losing KD, to add an asset, someone that may have some trade value, someone, and particularly with Klay Thompson sitting out, if they don't get somebody, my God, there's no Klay Thompson for most of the year. KD's gone. Steph and Draymond?
I understand why they did it. They needed somebody else that can put the ball in the basket. Trust me. I'm happy. I want all dudes to get paid. But again, from a general manager's perspective, what happens if I can't get rid of that deal? It works. It's great today when Klay is out. It's great. But if it doesn't turn out the way I want it 2 years from now, I'm stuck with that deal.
The other part is, from a financial standpoint, the deals weren't directly connected. But you moved out Andre Iguodala in order to – so that
the cap is toast.
But a great locker room presence. Great locker room presence, great mentor.
So was Mel Carr.
You're taking
– Give me a white towel.
But you're taking – okay.
So was Jack Haley.
Are you guys really putting Andre Iguodala in
the camp of Jack Haley?
You just said
locker room presence.
Andre, I apologize.
I love Iggy, man. But, you know, eventually it was going to happen.
What?
Coming up.
Eventually it was going to happen.
Let's move to Kawhi Leonard, who remains the one big piece of free agency puzzle that has yet to fall into place. Reportedly, Kawhi will meet with the Lakers today, and the team is increasingly confident about their ability to team Kawhi with Anthony Davis and LeBron James, who is undoubtedly hoping his second year with the Lakers is more successful than his first. All right, it'll be no surprise here. I've got a different little twist here. I just don't know if this will be a good look for LeBron James. I think if he adds the second best player, first best player, third best player, whatever you want to call Kawhi, to himself and Anthony Davis, I think that cheapens his legacy to some degree. I know some people will celebrate what a great recruiter and he restored the Lakers, but I'm not sure if this is the best thing for LeBron's legacy, landing Kawhi Leonard.
This whole thing.
I got no hesitation, so you go.
No, it's no hesitation. I'm just trying to the thing about the legacy part.
Jordan played with Scottie Pippen. Oh,
different
Hall
era.
Of
it's a different era.
One Hall of Fame.
Guess what? The Celtics played against 8 other teams and won 11.
That was 8 other. Oh, yeah, that's why they don't talk about it. That's why
they don't want to. But they do. But they say the Celtics are the benchmark of what we do in basketball. Them and the Lakers.
Most people say that.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying. So we can always say in certain eras this is what happened. This is the era. Do I agree with it? No. But this is the era of what these dudes are doing. It's going to continue to happen. So now what we're going to do is every great player that teams up with somebody else, their legacy, because of how the errors are going now, is not going to be worth anything. That's what we're doing.
It's not as competitive.
But that's what's going to happen. I mean, we just saw it with KD and Kyrie. So it's not going to stop.
This is going to have more of an impact on Kawhi's legacy than it would on LeBron James. LeBron James gives him the opportunity to rewrite his legacy in a positive way. First of all, it gives him a chance of winning a championship with a third franchise. No matter how you look at that historically, that is impressive. I don't care what role he plays. I don't care who he does it with. That's impressive. The second part is, what we've said about LeBron is that outside
of the Hall of Fame, Robert Horry, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Jack Haley, Robert Horry. Yeah,
the Hall of Fame.
Just write it down.
Go ahead.
Comparisons are killing me. The second part is, outside of a guy who he shared an agent with, or he already had a longtime friendship with, he's never been able to recruit another superstar. This would change the dynamic of somebody coming in and saying, yeah, I'll play with LeBron.
You said LeBron couldn't recruit. What about Chris
Bosh? He tried to get Chris Bosh to go to Cleveland, and Chris Bosh said, I'll play with you, but it has to be in Miami.
But I'm putting an asterisk on that recruit.
He needed Dwayne Wade and Pat Riley to bring that together. I'm not giving that to him solo.
No,
this is a case where the only reason that Kawhi would be going is to play with LeBron. that would be the reason that he would be going. And I believe.
Let me give you another reason.
Okay.
Because it'll be easier. And again, that's what the knock is going to be, is like three guys got together to do what's easiest.
Sure.
They can all sit for 25 games a year in the regular season and just roll out there at playoff time. This would be easier. It'll be the same. Look, this same little easy path just caused Kevin Durant to flee Golden State.
I agree.
We're not going to hold LeBron and these guys to the same standard?
But here's the distinction. This is why doing it in three different places gives it more gravitas. Because, yes, he did that in Miami, and he won championships. He went back to Cleveland. He orchestrated that to get the guys that he wanted, and he won a championship. He goes to L.A., he orchestrates it, he gets the guys that he wants, and he wins a championship. I can't ignore that. I know how difficult it is seeing teams to win a championship. We can say it's a foregone conclusion. We can say it's preordained by the talent. They still have to go out and do it. That LeBron James would have done it in three different places with essentially three different casts, that has value that he has yet to
prove. And we're prisoners of the moment because we're living in it now. It's just like, especially a lot of the old school guys come out, I can't stand it. I know George Gervin talked about he had a chance to play with Magic, and I get it. But again, down the road, when we look at this time, this era, just like the money, it's this era.
Yeah.
A lot of guys deserve to be paid back in the day, but that's this era.
Okay, broaden your perspective, though.
It's broad.
Beyond the media and beyond the athletes. I don't think fans like this.
Which fan? The older fans?
No.
The young fans don't care?
Oh, I think they do.
A lot of young fans care as much as some older fans.
I think it makes the NBA, it cheapens the NBA. And this whole thing of, because look, they're about, and I think this would be a good thing. They're about to shrink the schedule. And I think that'll be great. Because clearly these players are smart enough to, we don't need to play 82 anymore. Hmm. And I'm not knocking them for that. Smart, reduce the schedule. But if your legacy is changing the game, that every player looked around, well, what's my easiest path to the championship, and who can I bait into playing with me? That's going to be part of your legacy and brand. And I just don't think fans like that.
I think hardcore basketball fans are in agreement with you. They don't like it. But you have to be specific on which fans you're talking about, because there's a whole swath of fans who don't watch games. They just love to play.
Those aren't fans, but go ahead. Those are tweeters.
But they're following but they're following the NBA, and they are purchasing.
Fantasy basketball players.
They are, but they're following it, and they are
gamblers.
And they're consuming content involved with the league. But they're more interested in the transactions. They're more interested in who's going to play where. That's why the NBA owns more of the sports landscape than it ever has before. Sports fans, especially if this turns the Lakers into the super team, this is not only good for the mainstream sports fans who want to see, okay, how good are they going to be? Who's going to beat them? But it's also good for the NBA because parity doesn't work.
Here's what I think people are missing. The essence of sports is competition.
God, you sound so quaint right now.
Yeah, the essence of sports is people tune in to see great competition with high stakes. And again, this may be the football person in me coming out. That's what drives the NFL. People are like, man, this damn game really matters. And these guys are laying it all out, regular season, postseason, hell, some guys in the preseason. And when you start continuing to diminish the essence of competition in your sport, I just think it's great for social media. It's great for talk shows. We gossip about who likes who and who is planning on teaming up, blah, 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 blah. But at the core of your game should be the competition. I just don't think this is healthy.
And I'm agree with you on this perspective. From a competitor, I would love to go against my competition. Now, the pushback may come if ratings go down, if sales drop, if this continues to be a trend, but if it doesn't change and it's still going like this, especially from an international perspective, and the NBA is still as popular, it's going to be tough to change that narrative because you don't have the backlash or the effect economically that's hurting the league.
Right. Listen, Major League Baseball makes a ton of money. I was about to say a ton of money, but makes a ton of money. But it's not as relevant in American culture as it used to be.
Right.
They can't attract the large television audiences the way they used to be able to. And so I get, we keep moving the goalposts for the NBA. Internationally, they're doing it. Well, right here at home, they're not taking care of home as well as they could. I'm someone that truly believes this. I'm not saying this to be popular on TV or say something provocative on TV. If basketball were managed properly, it would be more popular than football. But it hasn't been managed properly. Everybody, my mother played basketball. Everybody in America at some point has shot a basketball, understands the game. But a sport that most people won't come near, half the population can't play football in a real way. And there's a big, large percent of the population that doesn't remotely understand what's going on a football field. They're all attracted to it because of the great competition. That's why I think the
But everybody grows up playing soccer. Everybody grows
up
playing
soccer. Don't.
I mean, I would say every kid, every kid starts out.
No.
That's the athletic starter kit. Everybody ends up.
That's
on
the last 20 years. Everybody plays basketball. Man, woman, child, wheelchair.
Understood. But the comparison I'm making is that just because people play it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to sit down and watch it. And the reality is, fewer and fewer people are sitting down to watch an entire game. They will watch the highlights. They will watch LeBron James throw a lob to Kawhi Leonard or vice versa. They want to see that. They don't necessarily want to sit down and watch an entire game.
Jim Jackson and Rick Bucher are back. We're joined now by former Pro Bowl linebacker Sean Merriman. Time to get antisocial.
What's going on, fellas?
Man, I like that nerd, Darnell.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Dame Lillard.
He just got paid.
He did.
Come on, man. I've been waiting for this,
a few weeks
man.
Ago.
Uh-oh.
Come on, be ready.
You ready? And I'm going to get him with the lights out one time.
Getting me hype over here.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
All right, what's popping?
Yeah, we're going to start off with Rob Gronkowski, who we know after 9 seasons in the league and numerous injuries, decided to retire this offseason. And it looks like he might have retired from the gym as well. Some recent pictures of Gronk surfaced the internet over the weekend. It looks like he just lost about all of his muscles here. Everyone online was shocked about how small he got after just a few months. Does this remove any hope that Gronk would consider returning?
Yeah, he's not playing football anymore.
He's through.
That's done.
Really?
Yeah. Come on, man.
When he going to play?
No, but like you know that. The thing is, if he comes back, he's only going to be a receiving tight end. He's not blocking anybody. I mean, Tony Gonzalez, his last few years, Tony Gonzalez wasn't more than 230 pounds. He wasn't blocking nobody. So if he comes back, it's going to be somewhere around the fourth or fifth game of the year, and he's catching passes. He's not blocking
like
anybody.
He's having too much fun right now.
Well, you know he's on
you
tour.
You know what I mean?
He's on tour. He's been out of Miami.
Rock is like, man, forget this, man. I love this life.
It's not the weight loss, because he could put that back on. He could train, and he could get back to where he needs to go. It's the expression on his face. And we know he's had a good time, but that looks like a dude that is like, I am loving life.
I'm done.
It looks like somebody don't care about a damn thing. He needs to go to a doctor.
All right, next. All right, man, let's move to the hardwood, where Jimmy Buckets is getting ready to make a move to South Beach through a signing trade, which got social media buzzing. They found an old magazine bio on Jimmy where he was asked what the one thing he never wear was, and he replied, a Miami Heat jersey. I'm sure he'll regret saying this now, but it got me thinking, would Jimmy regret not trying to join a super team?
No, I think he's built different. He's, you know, and he wants to be the man, and he's joined up with Pat Riley and those guys, and I think they'll put some pieces around him and have sold him. You could be the next Kawhi Leonard.
Or Dwayne Wade. Down there, Mike. Yep. No way, because his personality has always been alpha dog. I don't need anybody else. And I thought it was a smart decision to get down to Miami just because how the organization is run. One of the best ones, not only just in basketball, but in professional sports.
But I couldn't find three other people in that roster that I knew. When we were talking about this segment, I would Google. Like, I tried to find the other three guys who were there. I just don't know their roster. Is there anybody else down there that they're planning on bringing?
Goran Dragic is
still there
now.
He got rid of Whiteside.
Justin Winslow is there. So it's not
That's
so
two.
Much. It's not so much. But look at his original list. He had the Knicks, the Nets, the Clippers, and the
Heat. All teams with what?
All teams with max money.
And
Jimmy wanted to get paid.
He wanted to get paid, and he wanted to run it.
And he wanted to be in a place that was a big market and had nice weather.
And no state tax.
No state tax. That's the smartest one right there.
Next!
All right, sticking with the NBA, Free agency opened up with a bang and one of the craziest nights I can remember, and fans were all about it. So in comes Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio, who decided to chime in, going hard in the paint, taking a shot at NBA fans, saying, quote, NBA fans in July? Oh my God, we can't get enough. NBA fans in October through May? What else is on TV tonight? Y'all think this is a fair shot?
That's pretty good.
I do, and Mike Florio is, maybe he's trying to get back in my good graces, because for the past 2 years, ever since Kaepernick took a knee, he's been trying to be an NBA fan more than an NFL fan. Good for you, Mike. Welcome home.
What else are you supposed to say, though? Pro Football Talk. I mean, and I see some of the other people on the Twitter thread was talking, and some of them were NFL employees, and he responded back and said, oh, that's funny coming from somebody that's employed by the NFL. And I said, whoa, he's clapping back for real on here.
It was pretty good, though.
I like it though.
It's pretty good though.
Well, actually,
it got a lot of truth to it. It got a lot of truth to it though. Because early in the NBA season, sometimes it's like it drags out and you don't have. So you know that,
dude.
That Christmas time is when they start watching.
The fans that go to summer league to see the rookies, the top picks, that place is lit more than any game in November.
Yeah, but then it goes quiet.
He didn't get the calendar exactly right. It's not that long of a stretch.
But it's there.
But there's some truth.
Christmas is when it jumps off of the NBA.
Right.
It's Christmas game.
100%.
Yeah. All right, time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
All right, guys. So Pacers guard Darren Collison decided to retire from the NBA just after 10 NBA seasons to focus more on his faith. We know earlier this year, Maya Moore made a similar decision as well. So I wanted to ask you guys, do you think it's hard to balance religion with playing professional sports?
This is a great question. And yeah, I think it is. I think that, you know, I think there's a saying in the Bible that it's harder to get a camel through the eye of a needle than it is for a wealthy man to see the kingdom of God. Yep. And there's a reason why. As you know, I used to be poor. And then I got money and I was like, oh, this is what temptation feels like. Mm-hmm. This is what. And so, yeah, I think it is. I'm not saying everybody has to make this decision, but I respect the decision Darren Collison has made.
I respect it highly, but it is difficult. I mean, because not only the temptations, the things that happen, the access to everything, whatever you want playing professional sports. It's not just the money a lot of times. It's access to be able to do things, to see things. And I played with a player, LaPhonso Ellis, who was spiritually grounded. Okay, but when he first came in, he adjusted. But as his lifestyle grew, it became more comfortable for him. So I just truly believe it just depends on that individual. But it is tough.
I think it's a personal preference. You know, I played it with a bunch of guys who were very religious. I mean, listen to gospel music on the way to the games, listen after the games. They always were, you know, the temple or Bible study night before the game, right? And they were very religious. And I think it's a balance when it's there. I think that both the NFL and NBA has adjusted to it by giving guys more access to do more religious things outside of what they already offered previously. But I think it's a personal preference. I don't think that's a widespread thing. You might have a guy here or two that might take that route.
So there's believing and there's practicing and then there's living it.
Yeah,
and I have, honestly, obviously, it's difficult. The more temptation you have, the more challenging it is to live by the word. But I believe it's with anybody in the real world. It's hard to marry those two. I mean, there's a reason why they have monasteries. The monks go there so they get outside of the real world. The Dalai Lama and Gandhi, last time I checked, they ain't working 9-to-5s. Like, having to marry those two things, that's the true challenge. And if he's looking for a greater spiritual life, hats off to him.
Look, I'm going to remove a little of this from Darren Collison because what I'm about to say, and I want you all to respond to this. Darren Collison's going to remain wealthy. He played 10 years in the NBA. If he hadn't blown his money, he's going to remain wealthy. But I just think wealth does something to your ego that is hard to control. And particularly if you grew up without money and then you're given wealth at an early or late stage in life, I think that screws with your ego in a real way that it takes some self-awareness to even be aware that it's going on.
Well, I think when you grow up and you hear about wealth and what it means, what it could do for you, you have that vision, okay? Then when you finally get a chance to touch it, you don't have to be all the way the wealthiest person, but it does happen to you. I mean, you do look at things differently, and it's hard to negotiate and navigate through all the challenges that come with wealth. Trust me, I'm speaking from experience. It is extremely tough. And to have the religious side, too, to kind of want to do things the right way,
you got to be a special person in regards to grounding yourself.
I think money just makes you more of whatever you are.
Exactly. That was going to be my point. You are who you are. It's just money allows you to expose who you are and not really worry about what everybody else think because you don't need to. You already reached that point in your life where you're saying, I'm already set. I don't care what these other people think about me because you are already this person anyway.
And it doesn't mean you can't grow and change under that, but it definitely, when you get that first hit, whatever you are, now it's going to have headlights.
Joined once again by Jim Jackson, Rick Bucher, and Sean Merriman. Time to play Hot Clock. We'll each get just 24 seconds to give our hot takes on some of the biggest stories in the NFL. All right, let's start with the Packers, where two of the team's greatest quarterbacks, Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre, played some golf this weekend. And Favre says the two are now friends. We all know these two had a legendary rivalry. All right, Sean, we're going to start with you. You buying this?
Yeah, I believe it. You know, when you're playing on the same team, and at the time when you're threatened that somebody's going to come in and take your position, he strictly came out and said, this is not my job to get him ready. When you're in the same position and you're on the way out the door and they bring somebody in, nobody's your friend. Now, you're away from the game, you're fine with it, everything's cool. I believe it.
All right, Rick.
I'm judging from
the
outside.
Put you on the clock. Go ahead.
I don't know that Aaron Rodgers is friends with anybody. Like, close friends with anybody. I think he maybe appreciates Brett more because they've had similar experiences and now he knows what was going on. But it's hard for me to see Aaron just getting tight with anybody. We're good. But, yeah, I got my own thing going.
All right, that's not bad. All right, Jim. Put you on the hot clock. You buying this friendship?
I'll say it's friendly. I'm not saying friends. And I'm going to liken it to this. You appreciate this. If you saw a picture of me and Jay Kidd doing that, what would you think? Are we hanging out at the golf course? We having some fun? My God, right? I'm friendly with him. I may not be friends. But that's how I liken it. You like that one, Nick?
That's good. That's going to be hard to top. yeah, I think they are friends. I think Brett Favre is completely over it. I think Aaron Rodgers, there's some upside into being friends with Brett Favre. Brett Favre, particularly now since Bart Starr has passed, is the greatest Packer. And Aaron Rodgers hasn't surpassed Brett Favre's popularity, I don't believe, in Wisconsin or in Green Bay. So, yeah, I think there's upside for both of them to being friends. All right, let's move to the next. To Ezekiel Elliott, who will reportedly meet with Roger Goodell tomorrow to discuss an incident from earlier this year where he was caught on video pushing a security guard in Las Vegas. All right, Sean, do you think Zeke should be disciplined for this?
No. And, you know, I saw the incident. I was there. I watched it, the whole thing go down.
Hold on. You were there.
I was there.
I may give you my 24 seconds.
No, absolutely. I was there. He was a little bit aggressive, right, how he came in. He overreacted when they put his hands on him and stuff like that. I mean, I get that. He wasn't detained from doing anything. He was detained just to calm the situation down. I don't think he should be disciplined, but I do believe that when he talks to Roger Goodell, they should give him this answer. You do something else, no matter what it is, you're automatically suspended because there's been enough times where he's gone through it and they should have enough of it.
All right, Rick, do you believe he should be suspended?
Yes, I do, because of the condition that he was in. Ultimately, it's not a matter of who pushed whom, but the fact of the matter is that by the same token, we've had enough situations now. He was clearly inebriated. He was clearly not in the right mind in that situation. At this point, Zeke, you're too big of a star in our league. There's too much that has happened. You can't keep putting yourself in this situation.
Jimbo, you're on the clock.
Yes, but not by the league. I think the Cowboys need to do something because that's where it really needs to start. Hold him accountable. It's been too many times here that he's been out of touch and out of line. He needs to grow up a little bit more as a young man that you can't put yourself in this situation. But if the Cowboys don't push that agenda, then he's not going to learn that. You know, so to me, it's all on the Cowboys. They need to do something for that.
Damn, another good one, Jim. Jim, Sean, I'm going to direct my comments at you. I said this previously, and I'm going to say it again directly. He shouldn't be at EDC. He's got to learn every party is not for a high-profile NFL player.
No, I just believe you shouldn't go in there the way he did. He was just acting out of line. EDC is a good time. I had a great time there. I enjoyed myself. But I was with a great group of friends. We all had a very good time. You can't go in certain places because you're Ezekiel Elliott. You can't walk in certain places because you are automatic target, especially at a place like EDC, for sure.
All right, let's move to Baltimore, where the Ravens have rebuilt their entire offense to fit Lamar Jackson, and backup quarterback RG3 says the new scheme is going to shock people. All right, Sean, do you think a Lamar Jackson-centric offense will work?
Yes, it will, but it's not going to shock anybody. I mean, he's a running quarterback who can throw in a run and move out the pocket. They're going to run the ball and play great defense. The same way the Ravens has won Super Bowls, the same way they've been great in the past time, that's what they built their core on. They have a quarterback who can throw the ball, but he's not a throwing quarterback. If they base that around the run and get him moving out the pocket and let him make some decent passes, they can win a lot of football games.
Mm-hmm. I root for the underdog, people who say a guy can't do something. But did the Redskins regret going all in on RG3? Did the 49ers ultimately regret going all in on Colin Kaepernick? If you can't operate from the pocket, ultimately, on some level, in some way, there's going to be limitations. And that's what Lamar Jackson has demonstrated so far.
All right, Jimbo, can you go 3 for 3 here?
I think I can. I think you go back to Trent Dilfer for when they won it. It was defensive base. If they can improve that defense and ensure that the possessions are there and that they can lock in, then for Lamar Jackson, it's a balance. Do we run him? Do we pass him? Do we put him in situations where he's taking chances? If they can control that, then the narrative switches.
I'm going to go a completely different direction. I think RG3 just threw the first banana peel out there for Lamar Jackson to slip on. Our offense is going to shock people. He's setting an expectation that Lamar Jackson can't reach. They're building an offense in RG3's mind that he can run and Lamar Jackson can't. And so he's putting expectations out there that I just think it'll be tough for Lamar Jackson to reach. All right, before we go, I'd like to give U.S. soccer star, national anthem protester, and high-profile Trump troll Megan Rapinoe some advice. You go, girl. Seriously. Keep doing you. It's authentic, and I believe it's empowering you to become the most dominant, fascinating, and influential American women's athlete since Serena Williams was in her prime. I'm sure some of you are shocked. How can the same guy who bashed Colin Kaepernick for kneeling during the national anthem support Megan Rapinoe? It's actually quite easy. The difference between cap and rap is believability and authenticity. Cap converted to revolutionary when his career flamed out. He took a seat during the national anthem in the aftermath of the 49ers telling him to take a seat behind Blaine Gabbert. Before being benched, Cap didn't know the difference between Angela Davis and Angela Lansbury. Before being benched, Cap lived isolated in a Beats by Dre bubble, disconnected from his teammates, afros, and cornrows. Career failure and a steady diet of Sean King's tweets transformed Cap into mute Muhammad Ali. Rapinoe wasn't transformed. She was inspired by Kaepernick. There's a world of difference between inspiration and transformation. One is organic, the other is socially engineered. Rapinoe is at the top of her sport. She is in the discussion for the best player in the world right now. She's beloved by her teammates. She was smart enough and pragmatic enough to figure out she could make her political point without disrespecting the national anthem. When U.S. soccer dictated she stand for the anthem, she didn't nail herself on a Twitter cross. She stood and silently protested by refusing to sing and place her hand over her heart. Most important, she elevated her play to the next level. It's impossible to ignore her complaints because she's the best player in the World Cup. Every time she scores, we're subconsciously reminded that she opposes our president and believes he's unfit to serve. Rapinoe didn't settle for being a symbol propped up by agenda-driven journalists. Symbol is the designation reserved for revolutionaries who lack substance. Rapinoe chose to be a force for change. It doesn't matter whether I agree or disagree with her complaints. What matters is I can't reject them as a phony whine intended to distract from professional failure. Rap is no cap. That's why her success and protest don't bother me. More Speak for Yourself after this. Let's return to NBA free agency, which shook up the entire league yesterday, especially the Eastern Conference. The Nets were viewed as the big winners, landing Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. The Celtics landed Kemba Walker and Enes Kanter, while former Celtic Al Horford signed with the 76ers, who also inked Tobias Harris to a huge contract reigning champs Toronto are still waiting to find out what Kawhi Leonard's going to do. Jim, after all these moves, who's winning the East?
Now, this is right here. Can you see this?
Yeah.
I still got the Bucks.
The Bucks.
Still got the Bucks. I just like their continuity a lot better.
The Bucks didn't win it last year, so
but
still.
I think I like the Bucks this year. I think with some movement, I think for me, even though they lost Brogdon, I still like Bledsoe. I think Pat Connaughton can come in and hit some shots. Giannis is going to be better. You don't know what's going to happen with Toronto, okay, with Kawhi. Boston is not there, so I still like the
Giannis
Bucks.
Giannis got exposed. I don't like that pick.
Well, that's all right, but
he had a great last year.
He got another year to get better, bro.
We need to get you more on football.
No,
you were terrific on football. Now you're
man, whatever, man.
Crazy.
My opinion. You asked my opinion, and I gave it to you.
All right, Rick, who's winning?
You don't know what's going to happen with Kawhi.
Right. You do? You know what's happening? He's coming back?
He's coming back.
Okay.
Look, I've heard 1,000 different things. 1 minute, the Lakers do feel good about their situation. I also told this morning that the Raptors still have a very good chance of signing him. If he goes back, and this is the caveat,
if he goes back
to Toronto, they run it back. They are without question the prohibitive favorite.
They got lucky this year.
What's that?
They got lucky.
The Raptors got lucky.
Well, they're going to get luckier next year, because Warriors aren't going to be any better, and nobody else is stepping up.
Put an asterisk by that title.
Do you put one by Golden State's first one?
No.
Why not?
Why not?
Kyrie wasn't there, and Kevin Love wasn't there.
Yeah. Do we put the one on the Cavs because Andrew Bogut got hurt and Andre Iguodala had a bad?
They got lucky. Kawhi Leonard's great. They got lucky. Let me tell you who's winning these. Philadelphia 76ers.
What?
They're winning the East. Okay. I love the Al Horford move.
Who's going to shoot the ball from the perimeter?
Who is going to be their go-to guy with the game on the line and 7 seconds left?
I love the Al Horford move.
Me
I'm
too.
I'm sticking with the Sixers. I like some veteran leadership.
How many championships has Al Horford won?
I don't know. I like you better with
he
the soccer reference and everything like that. That was a great dialogue.
That dialogue was solid.
You need to go back to that.
Am I right? Didn't they damn near should have won it this year.
Damn near?
Who? Yeah, Sixers.
Sixers?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Damn near? They should have damn near won
it? You remember the shot that Kawhi hit? He's sitting down in the corner, blah, blah. And again, Kawhi's great. That was luck.
Was that to get to the finals? Was that to win the championship?
No.
That was to get out of the second round, right?
Damn near means you got to get past the first and get to the second.
Damn near, you got
to
win.
And then maybe get to the third.
Eight more games.
Yeah.
They've added Al Horford.
Who's going to shoot the ball?
They'll find somebody.
Where? They couldn't find him now.
He went to New Orleans. On a 2-year deal.
Isn't Kyle Korver still out there?
Hey, you know what? Though quiet as kept, though, he is still out there.
Yeah,
he is.
And so I like them adding Horford. I think it's great if something happens with Embiid. He can clearly handle things in the post, and if they want to play a little bit smaller.
But that's a problem. They got three guys who want to play in the post: Ben, Al, and Joel Embiid. I don't see how that helps them.
Well, I don't think they all have to be on the court at the same time, particularly at crunch time. Tobias Harris can shoot a little bit. And again, obviously they need more. But
obviously.
I think they'll find it. I think this is all part of the process. And I like my picks better than yours because, I think they got lucky. And two, I think Kawhi Leonard, my gut, no one's telling me this.
My gut,
he's going to be in Los Angeles out here with us.
Yeah.
So you're wrong. And Giannis got exposed.
But that's what another year is for.
Oh,
so
he's
going to
learn.
Better.
Yeah, I think Giannis will get better. Losing Malcolm Brogdon is a big loss. And they haven't, I don't know what's happening with George Hill just yet.
I heard they're going to bring him back. Yeah.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
But they still. Your best player has to be the guy who gets you.
But who else, if you think about the East, I still got questions on Philly.
Yeah.
You don't know, if Kawhi doesn't come back, you might as well take the Raptors out of it.
Okay.
So,
but this is the problem.
What?
Mine makes the most sense.
If he comes back, I'm taking to the fact that he's not going to be there.
Oh, wait. So this is based on a hypothetical, because if the guy comes back and they won a championship, they'll win another championship. Meanwhile, the Bucks, who could not get there, and the Sixers, who couldn't get out of the second round, that's not hypothetical.
I'm banking he's not going to be there, and I'm picking this one right here.
Uncle Jimmy's here.
Yes, sir.
Got any thoughts on the show so far?
Yes, sir, I do. What?
People are glad to have me back, and they tired of seeing you. Yes, sir.
Do you have a big dummy of the day?
I certainly do.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
The big dummy go to the person that said that Rob Gronkowski should go see a doctor because it appears like they mistreating their body. Because evidently, they losing too much weight. That sound like a Doberman pitcher calling the Great Dame a dog, if you ask me. Help him, Jesus.
All right, well, here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about James Dolan and the Knicks missing out on Kevin Durant. For months, conventional wisdom said the Knicks traded Kristaps Porzingis and cleared cap space in order to sign KD and Kyrie. It was a simple plan hatched a year ago that led to a dog day afternoon.
He's tried to pull the strings to do things the right way. They didn't want to overpay, get stuck with a contract, three to four years down the line that they couldn't move.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, what's your take?
Gave you 2 weeks, and that's the best you came up with, huh? best you can come up with was dog day afternoon, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, man, look, let me tell you what this was. People, I'm back. This ain't nothing but the movie Set It Off with Queen Latifah and Jada Pinkett Smith. Y'all remember. They came up with this foolproof plan to rob a bank, right? Only person that got away was Jada Pinkett. But the only reason Jada got away was because Queen Latifah took that ultimate, she took that L. She took that ultimate sacrifice. You understand what I'm saying? See, Kyrie Irving is Jada, all right? And KD is Queen Latifah. And you know KD, my boy. I love KD like a play cook, okay? When this thing don't work out and the jig is up, KD, he gonna try to go out like a G, you know? But you know, the New York media gonna already be locked up on him. They gonna have them dots on him. And he gonna know it ain't no way for him to get out of Brooklyn alive.
So you don't think this KD Kyrie thing, that's not gonna work in Brooklyn? You don't think it's gonna work?
No, not at all. It's not gonna work.
Why?
Because it's not gonna work because... First of all, man, I've been where KD's been, okay? I tore my Achilles during the game one time.
What game?
It was during my honeymoon, me and Madessa. Madessa's from the big country. We was,
come yeah, on,
we was
man.
Biloxi.
Yeah, use your legs, we bro. Use your legs, man. Use your legs.
And see, Madessa's heavy-handed. You know, she like to play rough. She fed me a big meal and put me out there in that water. That's how I tore that Achilles up. Now, let me tell you something. You don't know nothing about that kind of love right there, Jim Jackson. You might have had breakfast in bed.
You might be right.
But you ain't never had Thanksgiving dinner in bed. You know, now I'm going to tell you what. After that injury, I couldn't finish like I used to. You know, I had to work on my load management. See, now you could probably relate to this, Jim Jackson, because okay. KD... did Golden State just like Tony Braxton did you. You were sitting up looking at TV and you just saw something go across the ticket. Tony Braxton leaves Jim Jackson for Jay-Z in Brooklyn. Next time you saw Tony, you thought she was throwing up the rocker symbol. Look at she doing you like this. You know what she was saying.
Oh. Huh? I give you that one.
Yeah, you get
yeah,
that.
I get man. That. Load management, you gotta use your name, bro. That ain't look like you in that picture.
Hold on. Man. What's your take on James Dolan? That was the original.
That was the question.
That was the question.
Oh. So you gonna make me pull out my alter ego. You gonna make me go Jimmy A. Dodds on you. See, I think you the one that's been smoking the weed. Huh? For you to come up here and say something like that, it's preposterous. It's monogamous. It's ubiquitous. For you to have the audacity and the unmedicated galls to come up here and even say something like that. I just knew you had to go there. Let me tell you something. James Dolan. This just in, James Dolan just signed Greg Ostertag. Okay, now I understand why Charles Oakley wanted to put hands on it. Right now, James Dolan would rather run through a lion's den with a pork chop jock on rather than face Charles Oakley and the fans of New York right now. That's how bad things done got.
Do you have any more honeymoon pictures?
Yeah.
But the people at Fox said we couldn't show them.
Them people.
Hey, boy, I'm going to show you some pictures with some peanut butter and bacon grease to make you cry. Hallelujah.
Oh my
Yo,
God.
You don't know nothing about that. All
right, stop. No, I got to give my approval rating. I got to give my approval rating for James Dolan. I have him at a 59. He's, you know, a role player. I have him at a 10 in job performance, 8 in all-time greatness. He took the New York Rangers to the Stanley Cup Finals. 18 in character and 23 in authenticity for a 59.
Nah, I got you. Dumpster fire, bro. 33.
Dumpster fire?
Me, 33.
That man's
bro.
A billionaire. How can he be a dumpster
fire? Well, I'm talking about for the Knicks right here. I mean, just right. Come on. Job performance, 8. Nah, come on. We about the same right there. All-time great. Come on. 0.
The
Forget
Rangers
about it. 0. Character, 5 because of what he did to my man. Oh, and he didn't bring back Mike Woodson. No, bring that back. Authentic. Now, I would say this. I gave him a 20. You know why? He's very authentic who he is. He wears it on the sleeve, on the shoulder. That's who he is.